Hello there. This is 2,000 years talking to you from the depths of back there when we was. Now I'm still and they not.
Coming up on Philosophy Talk,
the lure of immortality.
Is it true that you are 2,000 years old?
Oh, boy.
I wouldn't mind drinking a little from the fountain of youth, but living forever?
2,006 months young. But I don't look more than 1,600, 1,700, right?
No, no.
No rational person wants to be infinitely tall.
No rational person wants to be infinitely heavy.
So why would a person want to be infinitely old?
Forever young.
The lure of immortality. Coming up on Philosophy Talk.
Welcome to Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're here at the studios of KALW San Francisco.
We continue conversations that begin at Philosopher's Corner at Stanford, where I used to teach and Ken still teaches philosophy.
Today, we're thinking about the lure of immortality.
The supposed lure of immortality depends on entirely on what flavor of immortality we're talking about, Ken.
Flavors of immortality, Tom?
Well, on the one hand, there's personal immortality, continued existence as the person you are in one form or another.
Well, isn't that what most people just mean by immortality?
Well, most people in the West, maybe, but in Eastern cultures and religions, there's a very different idea. For many Buddhists, immortality involves union with the eternal oneness, in which all distinctions between self and other are transcended.
Yeah, but frankly, John, I have never seen the point in that sort of immortality. I want to live forever, but I want to live forever as me. I don't want to lose myself in the great cosmic soup.
So very Western of you, Ken. But even if we stick to a narrowly Western outlook, there's still different flavors for immortality. Think of the difference between living forever in the here and now versus living forever in the great hereafter.
I've never been much of a believer in the great hereafter, I'm afraid, John.
Yeah, but you got to admit that that's what most Westerners think of when they think of immortality. After you die, you are resurrected in heaven with luck. Living forever in heaven is supposed to be really cool.
Yeah, but what exactly would you do in heaven forever? I mean, there's no human drama up there. No drama of love and loss. No striving. No conquest and defeat.
Yeah, so sitting on a cloud playing a harp with a halo doesn't appeal to you. But you think living on Earth forever would be any better? Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm in no hurry to die. But living this kind of life forever? Why would anyone want that?
Well, why not? I know you're going to say disease, a decline in suffering. Of course, nobody wants that. But suppose we could eliminate that. I mean, suppose that you learn today that eventually all diseases will be cured, all suffering eliminated. Wouldn't you do everything in your power to hold on until that day finally comes?
No. I mean, there are already too many humans. I mean, if they quit dying, I'm not sure it'll help suffering. If the old quit dying, things will get worse for everybody. Not just for humans, but every living thing. I mean, it just seems like an incredibly selfish idea.
Look, overcrowding, that's what you're talking about. That's a problem. But this is a practical problem. We can deal with that. Set it aside for the moment. I want you to focus on just what you want for you yourself. Why on earth would you ever positively want your life to end?
Because enough is enough. The life nature designed for us is basically toil, worry, and pain. It's interspersed with fleeting pleasures, food, and sex. But in the great scheme of things, those don't amount to much. Hardly more than the temporary cessation of pain.
No, come on, you don't have enough imagination. You're assuming it's all just the same old, century after century. But you got to think like John Stuart Mill. Man is a progressive being, he said, and I agree, and that alone makes me yearn for more. I want to see the human drama fully unfold. I don't want to leave before the play is done. I want to be there when we reach the stars, when we penetrate the deepest secrets of the universe. I want to dream bloom forever, John. I want to grow and develop forever.
Yeah. Poor John Stuart Mill. If only he could have lived to see the horrors of World War I and the horrors of World War II and the possibility of nuclear annihilation,
John,
and the Internet,
John,
which makes the sex slave trade so much easier to conduct. Poor guy didn't see all that human progress. I hate to tell you this, Ken, but you're not the star. You're just a bit player in the drama.
Jeepers.
But we all are. All of us. We're just bit players. To everything there is a season, a time to be young, a time to have a family and a job, a time to retire, to take pride in things accomplished, feel regret over mistakes made or things left undone, and yes, a time to die and leave the stage to others.
So you want immortality, I take it, but only in the great hereafter, not on Earth.
No, I never said that. You know, I read Dante's Inferno about hell. That didn't sound like much fun. So I turned to the Paradiso about heaven, and I found that too boring to even read all the way through.
So I think we've gotten ourselves into quite a pickle here then, John.
How so?
Well, we both agree that immortal life in the great hereafter would be plain boring. You fear that immortal life on Earth would be plain depressing. I, for my part, worry that union with the all-encompassing one would be, well, just pointless. But then why do people make such a fuss about immortality in the first place? What exactly is the lure of immortality?
Not sure I can answer that one, Ken, but I know where we might start searching. There's actually a booming market for immortality and life-extending products. We sent our roving philosophical reporter, Shuka Kalantari, to find out what's on offer in that market, and she files this report.
Imagine you could live for an extra 100 years. Would you do it? How about 500 years? Or 1,000? That could be a possibility if you get cryonically frozen. Cryonics is the practice of freezing the bodies of people who've died in hopes that they can be resuscitated in the future. Some people think this is the key to longevity. Like this guy.
I'm a dancing, singer-songwriter, filmmaking mathematician, and a lover of life.
That's George Nickel. He's currently working on a film about a tango-dancing vampire in Argentina. He wrote and performed all the music, too. Nickel became interested in cryonics in the 1980s when he built a really powerful microprocessor.
A microprocessor is essentially the brain of a computer. Without it, nothing much can be done by the computer.
He thinks that in 50 or 100 years, nanotechnology could provide us with tiny, atom-sized robots that probe into cryonically frozen bodies, repair cells, and bring people back from the dead. Nickel says a century ago, doctors declared people brain dead if they couldn't hear a heartbeat, or they'd hold up a mirror to a patient's nose to see if there was any vapor.
So, no pulse, no heartbeat, no vapor on the mirror, well, the patient's dead.
He says some of those patients could have been saved with 21st century tools.
Likewise, in 100 years, it may be easily possible to revive a patient who would be declared clearly dead using today's technology.
Okay, but what about immortality? After all, the sun's gonna supernova and vaporize us all in about 5 billion years anyway. Or we'll die a lot earlier because of global warming. So there is no forever. But if you want to live for a really, really, really long time, it's going to cost you.
The Cryonic Institute charges $28,000 for a whole body, whereas Elcor Life Extension Foundation charges $200,000 for a whole body and $89,000 for neural preservation.
Neural preservation. That means they just freeze your head. Today, the life extension industry is booming. In 2013, the market for anti-aging services and products was $260 billion globally. That includes everything from Botox injections to herbal supplements.
The quest for immortality is one of the most universal of human obsessions.
That's Adam Gollner, author of The Book of Immortality.
It's something that we have longed for since before there was history.
One of the first stories ever written was a Mesopotamian poem about immortality.
The Epic of Gilgamesh, which tells the story of a king who loses a loved one and goes off in search of eternal life, and he tries to find the secret to immortality.
During Imperial China, emperors would take mercury-based potions the doctor assured them would let them live forever. They all died.
So we're not that different from those Chinese emperors, except for we're not taking mercury, but we're taking human growth hormones, we're taking sirtuins.
And we're getting all high-tech about it. There are people like Dmitry Itzkov, a Russian multimillionaire in San Francisco who wants physical immortality with the help of robots. Or Ray Kurzweil, a Google exec who believes we'll soon be able to download our brains onto a computer. And don't forget George Nickel. He's the tango-dancing, filmmaking mathematician who wants to be cryonically frozen. He says he wants to extend his life so he could learn how to do more things.
There's just not enough time in a regular lifetime of today to do all I wish to do. And just having more time to experience this wonderful gift of life.
Our individual reasons for wanting to live forever may be as unique as the different ways we've tried to do it throughout history. From downing mercury to downloading our brains onto a computer. For Philosophy Talk, I'm Shuka Kalantari.